Good morning, and thank you for joining us for this, the second of our three-part series discussing artificial intelligence. My name is Jacob Montague, and I'm a solicitor in Clarks Legal's corporate and commercial department. And I'm joined by Lucy Densham-Brown, a solicitor in Clarks Legal's employment department. We are also both members of the firm's data protection team.
In this podcast, we will be exploring how artificial intelligence interacts with intellectual property rights, also known as IP rights. We will be discussing some of the recent issues with AI that have been raised by IP rights owners, and how the legal framework may need to adapt to address these issues in order to balance the rights of IP owners, but also not to stifle the huge economic, social, and political benefits that many predict will come with better use of AI.
So, lots to cover then.
Yes. I think it's important to state first and foremost what we mean by IP rights. These can be broadly split into two categories: those that need to be registered, being patents, trademarks, and design rights, and those that don't need to be registered, copyright and moral rights. The first topic we want to talk a little bit more about is rights that attach to AI-produced work, and the question: if the author or inventor of an image or a piece of software, an algorithm or literary work, is an AI system, can the work be protected using our existing legal framework?
This was a question that was raised back in 2018 when Dr. Stephen Thaler, an AI academic and researcher, filed two patent applications in which he listed an AI system that he himself created and known as DABUS as the inventor of the patents. The applications were rejected by the UK's Intellectual Property Office for two key reasons. The first, that DABUS did not meet the definition of inventor under the UK's own patent legislation, the Patents Act. And two, that Dr. Thaler himself was not entitled to apply for the patent due to his ownership of the AI system that created the invention. This decision was confirmed on appeal by the High Court, Court of Appeal, and finally the Supreme Court in December of last year. The key finding for the UK courts was that as DABUS was not a natural person, it could not meet the definition of inventor. Dr. Thaler also filed a number of patents in other jurisdictions, and these were met with similar responses. The European Patent Office, like the UK's own, also found that what is effectively a machine could not meet the current definition of an inventor. They also rejected Dr. Thaler's insinuation that he required the right to ownership of the patent and the ability, and therefore the ability to file the European patents by virtue of being DABUS's employer, in inverted commas. The European Patent Office rejected this on the ground that DABUS does not have a legal personality.
So, did anyone grant Dr. Thaler a patent?
Interestingly, yes, the South African Companies and Intellectual Property Commission. I understand that under the South African Patents Act of 1978, inventor is not a defined term, and as such, there was no reason to distinguish between a natural person and a machine. To be clear, though, this goes against the findings of the UK, European, and Australian counterparts, and was met with some interest by the intellectual property community.
That's really interesting. So, what does this actually mean in the UK?
Well, looking solely at the UK decision, this means that currently an inventor can only be a natural person and not a machine, and the owner slash creator of that machine does not currently have an automatic right to a patent in respect of something created by that machine. It's important to state here that the content DABUS was seeking to patent was autonomously made, i.e. without Dr. Thaler's input.
And why is that significant?
Well, in one very crucial way, it shows that the UK and European legislation may not be necessarily equipped to deal with technological advances, and that innovation may end up being stifled. If sufficient protections are not in place, this could potentially disincentivize AI innovators from creating machines that have the ability to create technological breakthroughs, as these would have less protections than those afforded to inventors who are in inverted commas, natural persons.
I see. Clearly changes are needed. So what are the next steps?
Well, first and foremost, consultation. In particular, consultation on the need to amend existing law or draft new law in order to accommodate new means of producing technical advances. It will come as no surprise to our listeners that this is not an overnight affair, and harmonizing legislation across many jurisdictions, even if they're in agreement at the moment, could take a very long time. However, they have to start somewhere, which is why it makes recent reports from the Financial Times that the UK has effectively shelved its own highly anticipated AI copyright code particularly concerning. There is this huge appetite for policy among creatives and AI advocates, with both parties desperate for clarity on copyright infringement.
That brings me neatly on to the second of our main subjects today, the recent allegations of potential for copyright infringement by AI systems in two key ways. Firstly, alleged infringement by unauthorized use of works during AI's data gathering or learning stage. And secondly, the alleged copyright infringement in works created by so-called generative AI systems. You will likely have seen from the recent news stories that alleged copyright infringement is becoming an increasingly popular topic, and we are seeing more and more high-profile individual and outlets alleging that new AI services are infringing their IP rights. This new UK code of conduct had been due to clarify what protections currently exist, and hopefully, guidance on working with key AI stakeholders, and should it be required, compensation. That this code would be voluntary raises all sorts of other questions.
I've seen recent stories about this, but how did we get here in the first place?
Well, this is not a new debate for the internet age. The use of AI assistance in the creation of IP and the use of existing IP by AI is not a new phenomenon. Importantly, nor is the use of data scraping in order to provide a service. Think of Google and everything it needs to provide you with the answers to your searches. Many believe that this is now at the forefront of people's minds due to AI's accessibility and the increase in the sophistication of generative AI services.
Lucy, you've mentioned generative AI a couple of times now. Can you explain what you mean by generative AI?
Of course. By this, I mean the AI image generators we regularly hear about, creating new drawings, graphics, and paintings in half the time it would take a human to do the same or similar act. I also mean the AI text generators, such as Microsoft's ChatGPT or Google's Gemini, those that could produce or generate a new poem, play, or novel in a matter of moments. I think it's first important to understand, in very simple terms, how an application like ChatGPT, to name but one, actually works. ChatGPT effectively works in a semi-unsupervised manner, having been given a distinct set of ground rules on which to review, analyze, and then regurgitate and reformulate the information. It's fed a truly vast amount of data, some believe to be the entire internet, to digest and, in inverted commas, learn from.
So ChatGPT and other systems can effectively just use anything on the internet?
So OpenAI, ChatGPT's creator, has been largely transparent about its resources and states on its help page that ChatGPT and other services are developed using, firstly, information that is publicly available on the internet, secondly, information that we license from third parties, and thirdly, information that their users or human trainers provide. Where information is not licensed, the theory here is that generative AI systems are relying on the American doctrine of fair use. The UK has a semi-innocuous term to copyright infringement known as fair dealing. Jacob, can you explain what fair dealing is?
Of course. Well, I'll try to. Basically, certain actions such as research, private study, parody, and criticism are exempt from copyright infringement when the use of the material is seen as fair dealing. So what is fair dealing? Well, typically, it's not a simple definition. In fact, there isn't even a statutory definition that we can point to. Instead, the question you're supposed to ask is how would a fair-minded and honest person have dealt with the work? Again, not an easy question for us to answer here, And I feel like we need a whole other podcast on fair dealing.
So, although these AI systems seek to rely on fair dealing, news outlets, creatives, artists, and also the inheritors or assignees of certain moral rights in historic IP are not happy and alleging that the initial scraping of these works, without a proper license, to train AI software, which then generates works that are similar, cannot fall within the exceptions we have discussed previously, and that infringement must have occurred. This argument is at the root of the New York Times allegations against OpenAI. The New York Times alleges that many of the articles have been used without permission by ChatGPT. It has further alleged that ChatGPT has in some instances repeated verbatim extracts from the New York Times articles when a user has asked queries regarding current events. In similar circumstances, a group of authors have also alleged that OpenAI used their books without permission to train ChatGPT. Whilst it has been reported that a US district judge has dismissed some of the claims by the authors that the content generated by ChatGPT potentially infringes on the author's copyright, the question of whether tech companies' unauthorized use of material scraped from the internet to train AI infringes on copyrights on a massive scale has not been ruled on.
So what is the outlook then?
Well, we can't really be sure at the moment. Besides what is to be a major battle between AI innovators and IP rights holders.
And what do we need to happen to address these issues?
Well, infringement or fair use, fair dealing questions need to be answered. But these will likely be interpretations of existing law that, as we have discussed already, is unlikely to be relevant to the vastly changing technological landscape. I think that everyone is in agreement with the role AI is going to have in our lives, both business and personal, and that we don't want to stifle innovation. But all jurisdictions are desperate for guidance and new law.
We didn't think we could end the podcast without briefly touching on another dominating news item that we suspect you will all be familiar with, the recent Writers Guild of America strike. Whilst the strikes were about myriad of issues, including compensation, minimum standards, and profit shares, alignment on how generative AI would be used by the studios and writers was particularly crucial to negotiations coming to an end and an agreement being reached. Similar to the issues we have already discussed, members of the Writing Guild were concerned about how generative AI was going to be used. The Writers Guild envisioned, and many believe legitimately, writers being phased out of projects as AI generative services were used to write, edit or amend scripts, or writers not being compensated for source material that was being used by the AI services to generate new work. So what has been agreed? Well, in what many believe to be a landmark agreement, and one that other creative industries might tailor or borrow from, the key agreements were as follows. That AI-generated material cannot be used as source material. The writers can choose to use AI to assist in the process, but cannot be compelled to do so. And that writers must be informed if they are provided with AI-generated material to work on or with.
Thanks, Jacob. We appreciate that we've covered a lot of ground here, and there are a lot of moving parts when it comes to IP and AI conversations. We hope that you have enjoyed this podcast. As this is such a constantly evolving area, I expect we will be revisiting this topic soon. Please follow our updates on LinkedIn for details on our up-and-coming webinars and the next podcast in our series Exploring Artificial Intelligence. If you have any questions on the subject we've discussed today, please email our data protection team at dataprotection@clarkslegal.com. Many thanks for listening.